This is Edwin O'Shea. We're going to talk about section 1.4, but the second half of it, beginning with focusing mostly on applications of continuous functions. I use the word applications, you know, in the loose sense. I don't mean applications to biology or engineering or any of those things, but what I really mean is applications to other, I guess, to other ways in thinking about mathematics. So let's go to that first, that last section in the reading with the heading Extreme and Intermediate Values of Continuous Functions. So this is a short section, but quite dense, and it will really need to be read over multiple times, just like the other sections, but maybe even a few more times than the other sections. So it begins by saying that we examine two important consequences of continuity. And it's going to give us two results. One we're going to call the extreme value theorem, and the other the intermediate value theorem. Let's start off with theorem 1.7, the extreme value theorem. It says that if you have a continuous function on a closed interval, a, b, there exists x values, big M and little m, in that closed interval, such that the function evaluated at big M is the maximum value, and the function evaluated at little m is the minimum value of the function on that interval. So the figures above it are giving us a function that's continuous on a closed interval, and you'll notice that there's some maximum. And by here, by maximum, we mean the largest value attained in that closed interval. So you could see the figures there. You have big M and little m. Notice that little m is an extreme point. Little m is in fact equal to the right end point of our interval AB. That's the main reason as to why in the extreme value theorem statement we insist on the interval being closed. Because if that interval was open, then the minimum that the function would attain would be very, very close to b, but it wouldn't be realized at that b itself unless b was included. Theorem 118 is the intermediate value theorem. Again, you have a function being continuous on a closed interval. And then it says, if you have any capital K, that's on the y-axis, if you have any value capital K, that's strictly between f of a and f of b, namely the evaluation of the function at the endpoints of your closed interval a, b, then there has to exist a C lying strictly between a and b, such that if you evaluate the function at that C, it's equal to K. Now note that the intermediate value theorem, and for that matter, the extreme value theorem, they're not telling you how to find the points in question. So looking at the intermediate value theorem, it's a statement about the existence of some C between the A and B. It does not tell you how to find it. Let's make that very, very clear. So it's not like an algorithm or a process. It's just telling you that it exists. Now, we're not going to prove either of these theorems, but one of the themes that we've hit upon in class is that sometimes if you want to know how something works, instead try to figure out how it doesn't work. Or more generally, if you want to understand what something is, find out what it's not. Understand what it's not. And that can often shed light on what something is. So in the figures that follow Theorem 118, we're seeing different cases where, like, you know, if we have the first case is for the extreme value theorem, you could see that it's not a function on a closed interval and the minimum is not attained on that interval either. Notice that if your function is, the second figure is that if your function is not continuous, then you're not going to be able to find a C such that f of C is equal to K, where K is some number between f of A and f of B. So continuity is very crucial in the intermediate value theorem. And then, of course, again, in the last figure, we see how we have no maximum value, or we potentially have no maximum value achieved in the extreme value theorem if the function, again, is not continuous on the closed interval. Note the text after those figures. It says an extremely useful special case of the intermediate value theorem is the case when we consider the intermediate value of k equal to 0. Namely, this is asking for roots. And that's what theorem 119 goes on to say. It says that a function can change sign only at roots and at discontinuities. And that's a really nice thing to think about. Going on to examples and explorations, let's go straight to example 4. Example 4, it's assuming that a person's weight is a continuous function. So once you assume that, you can start applying the extreme value theorem and the intermediate value theorem to this function. That's what you're asked to consider in that example. That example is also nice to think about. Later on in exercises 75 through 79, you'll really want to be looking again at example 4 to think about those functions. Example 5 is applying the intermediate value theorem to a continuous function. You'll see an example of that in the exercises, in particular exercises 49 through 54 and 55 through 60. Oh no, sorry, I take that back. I meant to say exercises 55 through 60 and 61 through 66. That's where example five, will be very helpful to look at. And example 6 is again that special case of the intermediate value theorem, where you want to investigate roots. Pay particular attention in part A of the solution to example 6, where you're drawing a number line and you're looking for where the function is changing signs. Note that they have the letters DC over negative 2 and 1 for the function g of x. That's indicating that you have a discontinuity at negative 2 and 1. But all the other ticks on the number line are roots. And remember that a function can only change sign at the roots or at its discontinuities. So this is keeping track of the sign. Going on to the exercises, you have a nice selection of exercises. 67 through 74 are the multi-part functions. Do take some little bit of work to think about. So it'll be very helpful to draw a picture, and that will clarify a great deal about those questions. And finally, in the applications, you have exercises 75 through 78, sorry, 75 through 79, and those are nice ways to think about extreme value theorems and intermediate value theorems. Just like example 4, when you're looking at a person's weight from the age of 18 to 45. Finally, exercise 80 is really, really nice. Exercise 80, it's on the bisection method and using the intermediate value theorem. Let's walk ourselves through that for a second. So the problem it's studying is to look at the square root of 2 or to find an approximation for that. Remember in class last week we showed that the square root of 2 cannot be expressed as a rational number. Again, it cannot be expressed as a ratio of two integers. So you might wonder, well then, how do you get a handle on the square root of 2? How can you approximate it? And what exercise 80 does is shows us a way using the intermediate value theorem to get a nice approximation of the square root of 2. So the first thing, so let me just jump to part B. Part A says that if a function is continuous and if the sign of f of a is negative and f of b is positive, then the intermediate value theorem tells you there must be a root between a and b. So again, this is a special case of setting the capital K equal to 0 on the intermediate value theorem. B then asks you to consider the function f of x equal to x squared minus 2. Note that the root of that function is the square root of 2. So if you can find an approximation for the root of f of x, you have equivalently found an approximation for the square root of 2. Part C asks you to bisect 0, 2. So you know that from part B, you know that there is a root between 0 and 2, and so now you're going to take out a divide and conquer strategy. You're going to compute f of 1. You're going to find whether f of 1 is positive or negative. It turns out to be negative because f of 1 is 1 squared minus 2, which is minus 1. So that tells you that f of 1 is negative. F of 2 still remained positive, of course. So in fact, you must have your root between 1 and 2. Again, applying the intermediate value theorem once again. And part D and E just tell you to repeat this process. And so what you do is that if you repeat it a sufficient number of times, you'll kind of hone in on a good approximation of the square root of 2. All right, folks. That's something nice to think about. See you in class.